is reports on recent activities. Tab 1, document number 1, is an executive committee summary. I'll briefly touch on some of the highlights and encourage you to read it more fully. And we discussed hearing implementation issues. Amendment 5 is contemplating some significant administrative changes. There's concerns over funding alternatives. And also some discussion at the executive committee about the overlap of our Herring Amendment 5 and the Mid-Atlantic's Herring or Mackerel Amendment, is it 14? And whether or not they should be synced or not. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. We discussed and reviewed all the timelines that are for our pending actions or our actions in progress. We discussed SSC membership, which we just had a discussion about. We appointed advisors for 2011 through 2013, but we also went out for a second solicitation looking for industry members for the enforcement advisory panel, as well as a second solicitation. We're looking for Southern New England groundfish industry members for the groundfish AP. We had a discussion on priorities, which we'll get into later today. We had discussed a enforcement committee tasking for gear marking requirements and concluded that we have no place in that discussion. We also talked about the possibility of adding back a council meeting to the annual calendar, but through discussion with staff, felt that on a case-by-case basis, if an agenda load is very heavy, we would try to start the meeting a half a day early instead of adding an additional three-day meeting in the calendar, case-by-case basis. We also, Paul Howard also discussed with the council the issue of administration and implementation of management measures that require funding. Such as monitoring in the herring fishery. And it was suggested that a strategy should be that the council should vote through its preferred alternative and funding alternative as well, with a contingency that if that funding is not available, this is how the council would like to see things handled in the event that funding is not available. The executive director suggested to the committee that we change the way we handle our annual elections such that instead of going through ballot by ballot for each seat, we consider taking the top three vote-getters in the first ballot. And I believe that he will come to the next executive committee meeting with a recommended change to our SOPs, at which time we can review that. There was also discussion about how in this changing world, how data is coming online more rapidly and not necessarily in sync with how our management plan cycle goes. And there was discussion about building triggers into our management plan so that they can receive new information and new scientific or stock assessment information and adjustments can be made accordingly. We had some discussion about adding a one-day Groundfish Committee workshop, which is added to the priorities, so we'll get into that in discussion under priorities. We discussed the winter flounder issue to ask the SSC to examine any recent fisheries independent and fisheries dependent data collected since GARM 3. That was a TOR for the SSC, so we'll hear the results of that in the SSC report at this meeting. There's a delay in the SBRM reporting that was we're supposed to be receiving a series of reports. There are 8 terms of reference for SBRM, and on the third year of SBRM, the council is supposed to take delivery of a report from the Science Center. However, some of those TORs are going to be delayed. So we heard about that at the executive committee. I think we're expecting those reports in is it September? Okay, September we'll get the final 3 TORs. And then we discussed a workshop for reconciling spatial scales of fishery science and management. We received a letter from the Northeast Consortium asking us to support a workshop that they have ongoing, and Paul Howard's reviewing our budget and we'll make a recommendation to the executive committee as to whether or not the council should be a supporter of that workshop. Any questions? David?
Yes, Mr. Chair. In the report, the executive committee report, number three, the bottom of the page, says that the executive committee asked the executive director to draft a new policy about SSC member activities outside the council process. Is the full council going to get to review that, or is that just going to be an internal document?
That would be a SOP that the executive committee would look at next meeting and then bring it back to the council. For the council would have to debate and approve it.
Okay, because I would just urge a great deal of caution in limiting SSC's members' ability to issue papers or public comments that may be different, perhaps, from council positions, just because I remind everybody that they all have jobs other than being on the SSC. They work for state agencies or environmental organizations or whatever, and you know, their individual positions may be different than the council's position on any given issue as individuals. So I just urge a great deal of caution in drafting that statement, because I really don't want to curtail people's ability to speak in public.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Any other questions? Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just noticed under Herring, the first paragraph, last sentence, or last two sentences, says funding alternatives were examined and need to be fully developed. Administrative costs may be significant. And the Herring Committee is meeting on November 30th, and this is an item that we will be considering, funding alternatives. And I was just curious, I am assuming that the administrative costs may be significant was a concern from the agency, and I was wondering if Pat could speak to that, if there was something specific or limiting that we should be considering for our November 30th agenda.
Right. I think this was just generally about the funding question, and some of the proposals that are in there that have at this point not been fully fleshed out, in part because of the difficulty of administering them and difficulty of the industry to comply with them. And so this was just sort of a general discussion that this needed to be clearly part of the committee's discussion at the next meeting.
Well, the broader discussion about funding was that, you know, if the council prefers that programs be government funded, our plan should say that. When we submit our plan, we should say that the government should fund this particular activity. And then that will start the cycle for procurements and line items and having the public, input to their legislators to get funding for the council or whatever. But in the event that funding isn't readily available, you need to implement something. So there should be, in the meantime, before government funding is available, what's going to happen? What are we going to do? Have no measures, or have measures paid for by the industry, or just no measures, or whatever. So, but the goal was, if we have a plan that says government funding, we should submit that so that the ball can start rolling for procurements, for appropriations.
Dr. Pierce.
And Mr. Chairman, a clarification regarding the 2011 priorities, number five. Where it says in the first paragraph, it was agreed that those groundfish items be included under the groundfish below the line section. I'm assuming that the groundfish items referred to are the ones that Sally noted about the ones left off from Amendment 16 to Amendment off of Amendment 16 to 17. I assume that's what the reference is to and not to the haddock catch cap. Is the haddock catch cap below the line? Is that a recommendation of the executive committee?
It's neither above or below the line. Have you reviewed the priorities in your document, in your binder?
I've looked them over, yes, but I'm responding to this this summary of what happened at the executive committee. It's important to know what the executive committee did recommend. It seems that everyone, if I read it right, then the executive committee took no position on the haddock catch cap regarding above the line or below the line. Am I correct? No position was taken?
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, moving on, Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just why not one item. In under tab one, there's some information on the first NROC meeting that I attended on just last week. And basically, the new executive order for ocean policies calls for a governance structure that includes regional planning groups, RPGs. And NROC, I thought, was positioning itself to be that regional planning group. And the executive order says this regional planning group would tackle marine spatial planning, coastal marine spatial planning first, and develop this marine spatial plan within 5 years. At the meeting, they talked about having a regional planning group that would membership would be NROC, the council, and the tribes, and that NROC would become the planning body. So I was a little bit confused with that, and I basically informed the group that, and I used some words of our chairman from the Mid-Atlantic Council. I said, wherever fisheries is on the menu, wherever you're going to talk about it, whether it's at NROC at the planning level or at the regional planning group, wherever fisheries is on the menu, we want to be at the table. So that's what I left them with. If we want to be a member of NROC, if that's not going to be the regional body, but it's going to be the planning body, and we also want to be a member of the regional planning group. So they're a long way from, well, they're 5 years away from a plan. My observation is that the group does not think regionally. They still think along state lines. We broke out into working groups, and each state is identifying their energy needs. And so then they would have these renewable energy, say, wind farms. And so each state was concerned about getting the employment and the revenues and all the good things that come from a state plan to take care of its own energy. But I mentioned that if there are five renewable energy sites in the EEZ, then that's five times as much pressure on fishing, as opposed if this group would think regionally, you might be able to have one offshore energy site that might serve three plants. But they're not thinking regionally right now. And I think it's going to be difficult for this body to start thinking in a manner which I thought the Ocean Policy Task Force wanted them to think. And if they don't start thinking regionally, we're going to have five times the amount of pressure in the EEZ when they start citing renewable energy. The next meeting is in January. There's also a national CMSP workshop in early 2011. The NOC, or the National Ocean Council, just met, I think, the day before or the day that we were meeting, so I don't know what guidance came out of that first meeting, but we do have Sam Rausch coming this week to talk about the NOC and to talk about coastal marine spatial planning. And the last thing I left with the group is that the council hasn't decided who would represent the council on the regional planning board or Regional Planning Group, RPG, or NROC, that it would probably, it should be someone in council leadership, you know, in order to commit or have a strong knowledge of what the council is doing in fisheries. So once we get this governance structure along the way, the council and, is going to have to decide who should represent the council on this regional planning group. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Paul? Mary Beth?
Well, it's not necessarily a question for Paul, perhaps for Pat or Gene. And I know the guidance documents on the National Ocean Policy do reference tribes and inclusion of tribes. But in the Northeast, you know, Maine and Massachusetts certainly have some interaction with tribes, but we don't have, you know, in the EEZ any type of, you know, allocations to tribes or agreements or treaties or anything like that. And yet it seems like they'll have a major, you know, I mean, is there any guidance? I mean, certainly in the Pacific where tribes are engaged in fisheries, are utilizing marine resources, in the North Pacific as well, it makes sense to include the tribes. But in the Northeast, I'm not sure it does. I mean, is there any guidance to when you need to or when you don't? And it's just kind of a funky thing.
We had lengthy discussions about the tribes, and I was very concerned that right now we don't recognize any of their, say, rights or privileges in the EEZ. But the states have been working with tribes for quite a long time dealing with state fisheries and state natural resources with tribes. And there are, I was not aware of this, but there are 10 federally recognized tribes within New England. But there are over 500 tribes that are not federally recognized. And I guess this NROC, I guess the federal government, as they were developing ocean policy, sent over 500 letters to various tribes. They are going to engage the 10 federal tribes in this region. And I express concern about not opening up Pandora's box, not giving any unnecessary expectations of what types of privileges or rights they may have in the EEZ just because they're on a regional planning group. But I would suggest that this is a very very important issue for those that are managing in the EEZ like us, and that we should ask these questions to Sam when he comes.
Anyone else for Paul? Okay, moving on. NIMS Regional Administrator.
Thank you. So starting with herring, Amendment 4 was approved on behalf of the Secretary of Commerce on November 9th. All the measures recommended by the Council were approved, and we expect to publish a final rule sometime in January. The proposed rule for the amendment was published on October 18th, and the comment period on the rule closes on December 2nd. This is essentially the ACL-AM amendment for herring. Recall that we've got a parallel track process where we publish both the notice availability of the amendment itself as well as the proposed rule. This is often confusing to people. As I said, the amendment has been approved and the public comment period on the rule is still open. The public comments on the rule are effectively comments on whether or not the rule is consistent with the amendment. So Management Area 1A, as most people are probably aware, that on November 7th, we, based on projections, closed the 1A fishery for herring, expecting that the 95% of the tack might have been taken. As it turned out, it was not, and made a decision to reopen that fishery. for effectively 2 days, yesterday and today. There's quite a bit of activity out there right now. I'm really hoping that we made the right decision and that we still stay within the overall TAC. This is something of a test for how well this reopening works. As I said, a lot of activity out there right now. Based on our experience with this, we've decided we have the authority in the regulations to make changes to the reporting requirements to assist with administering the regulatory requirements. So we've decided to move forward with a regulatory amendment that will implement daily reporting through the VMS system in the herring fishery in the hopes that that will make this process a little bit less difficult in the future. As this is a high-volume fishery, and it's been very, very hard to do the projections to effectively monitor and close this fishery in a timely way without either clearly undershooting or overshooting. So we think that will be that will give us an additional tool to allow us to perhaps get a little bit closer. On I think that was it on herring. Yeah. So on multi-species, the deadline for receipt of the 2011 sector operations plans was September 1st, with additional time allowed for sectors to submit their membership rosters. That date was originally September 10th, and we did end up announcing an extension to December 1st. As we go through this process, which has been a learning process for all of us, we're finding that we don't need quite as much time as we thought we would to get the final rosters. And so right now, there is a September 1 date in the regulations, but we are at some point going to suggest a change to that, to the December 1st date. We think that that will continue to allow us enough time to work with the contractors who prepare the NEPA documents and get the other regulatory requirements through the process, publishing the sector operations plans and so forth, and give the industry a little bit more flexibility about finalizing the rosters. We received 22 operations plans that propose 16 active sectors and 6 lease-only sectors, including 4 state-run permit banks. While 17 of the sectors proposed for fishing year 2011, were approved in Amendment 16 and operational for 2010, 5 of the 22 operations plans received are for new sectors that are contingent upon approval of Framework 45. We are in the process of drafting the proposed rule to implement the sectors for 2011. On leasing activity, as of September 24th, we had in the common pool 37 leases processed. Of those, 36 were approved, representing 44 distinct permits. The total number of days at sea transferred was 502.29. For sectors, 54 leases were processed, 47 approved, representing 77 distinct permits and 1,444.08 days at sea were transferred. The information you do have in your binder, the summary table of catch by species. There is an updated version of that on our webpage. It is now available through November 5th. So those, again, are the summary tables of catch by species. We've also, on the web page, updated the information that we've been providing on 2009 versus 2010 data. It's been updated through September 30th now. And just quickly, we're showing that approximately 82% of the landings, approximately 80%, 82% of ground fish landed in 2010. I'm not doing a good job of saying this. approximately 82% of what was landed in 2009 has been landed in 2010. So the total number of pounds is about 82% of what was landed in 2009. That represents, at this point, over 100% of the revenue. So in other words, the revenue is higher in 2010 than it was in 2009. It's actually 106.8%. Of what it was through September 30th of in 2009. We've heard quite a lot about the number of vessels and number of trips. Information is certainly showing that the number of trips taken is down compared to 2009. Only 61% of the number of trips that were taken in 2009 have been taken in 2010. That's actually consistent with the information we're seeing, which shows that they're actually landing more per trip. And as far as the number of vessels, approximately 80% of the vessels that took trips through September 30th in 2009 have taken trips so far this year. And that, again, is consistent with the sector model, which indicates that people have the opportunity to be more judicious in how they use their days and their fishing time. So that's multi-species. For Atlantic sturgeon, I may have announced this at the last council meeting, but just in case, we have published two separate notices, one for the northeast stocks and one for the southeast stocks, in the Federal Register that propose that five populations of Atlantic sturgeon along the U.S. East Coast receive protection under the Endangered Species Act. That notice was published on October 6th, and comments are being accepted through January 4th. The Gulf of Maine population is proposed for listing as threatened, and endangered status is proposed for the Chesapeake Bay, New York Bight, Carolina, and South Atlantic populations. We've just concluded the four public hearings on this proposal, beginning with November 3rd in Portland. We were in Newport News, Virginia, Stony Brook, New York, and Wilmington, Delaware. And then that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Pat? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Pat, for your report on herring. I'm pleased that you're going to be moving forward with the daily reporting. I think that will help us all out. Question for you. As you know, the states and the ASMSC have not yet issued a notice of closure, so I'm wondering what the next steps are going to be with the agency to determine this week's landings and whether or not you're going to maintain Area 1A closed or consider reopening it. Although there's been a lot of activity, our staff has reported that landings were very low yesterday, and you know, we'll see what comes in today.
Well, we announced both the opening and the closure at the same time, so it is effectively closed tonight at midnight. I honestly do not anticipate that we will be able to reopen. I'm much more concerned about going over, and I didn't expect very many landings yesterday. I think the majority of them will come in today.
So on behalf of the states here, can we kibbutz before we all go home so we can determine whether or not we need to issue our own notices of closure?
Sure, but I don't think that we're going to have that landing information until at least the end of the week.
Dr. Pierce.
Again, Pat, thank you for the prompt reaction to the effort in the herring fishery and the anticipated landings that you assumed were going to happen. Early on, there was some question as to whether or not it was a wise decision by the service. I was caught off guard by the nature of the notice, the timing of the notice. But after talking with George Darcy and with Hannah, it became very clear to me that the service was very responsible in the action that it took. And George in particular was very helpful to me and the rest of the states in understanding the reasons for the service's action. So compliments to the service in that regard. Frankly, we were all caught by surprise with the level of landings that occurred, and that's why we have first questioned what in the world was going on, since all summer long and early fall, very little landings were occurring, and the states were trying to allow more landings through more days of landings being allowed through our individual state actions. Having learned that approximately 5,000 metric tons were landed in about less than 1 week was a bit of a shock to all concerned. So, indeed, we will be prepared to take action whenever the closure notices occurred, although in our state it really is not much of a factor since it's the federal permit holders are the ones who are. We have no state permit holders, really. So, again, just compliments regarding that. In addition, thank you for your indication that you're moving forward for the daily reporting requirements. We think that's critical. That'll help out in a major way, especially next year. I've got a question regarding your statement on the membership rosters for the individual sectors. You changed the date, which was a good thing. You moved it to December 1. I can't recall offhand where the service stands regarding membership rosters for state-operated permit banks. As you know, we're working with the service to move it along in Massachusetts, certainly, with our state-operated permit bank, but we're still struggling to figure out how we can offer up a membership roster by the deadline when we have no members. So would you care to offer at this time some guidance as to how we, state-operated permit banks in particular, those that are not established yet, like the state of Maine, how we are to deal with that requirement?
Yes, thanks first for your compliments to the staff. They did a great job last week, and this was a very, very difficult issue, and we pulled out all the stops to try to get what information we could to make an informed decision. So thanks for that, and my appreciation to them, too. The December 1 deadline is the deadline for everyone. We're trying to work with the state of Maine because we believe that there's some possibility that they'll have a list of vessels within some reasonable time period after the December deadline to allow for that permit bank or sector rather to be functional in 2011. But in our conversations with the staffs from the other states, there doesn't seem to be any possibility that that there'd be a roster by December 1st, and in most cases there probably won't even be vessels by the end of the fishing year. So I don't think that there's much we can do about 2011. Sort of the best case scenario is if the states are able to purchase vessels before the end of the fishing year, if those vessels are in sectors, the states would have some opportunity at that point to control the activity of those vessels and the PSEs from those vessels. But realistically, I think the other three states are probably looking at a fishing year 2012 start date.
Yeah, I thought that would be the case. It's a little late in the game, but those are the rules by which we live. We are sectors. We are not unique yet. And, of course, that will be changed through the amendment process. So thank you for that. One final question. You mentioned groundfish landings, sector management. Things appear to be going according to the sector model. Fine enough. I noticed, has the service taken down from its website the transfers that are occurring between sectors, the amount of poundage that's being transferred, and, of course, the dollar value of that fish that's being transferred? I know it was up on the website before. Has it been taken down? And if so, why was it taken down? Because that information has proven to be useful, insightful, to those who would like to know what's going on, at least in a coarse way. So what's happening with regards to that?
Yes, we did take the information back down. Thank you for reminding me. I should have mentioned it in my report. I'm disappointed as well that we had to take the information down after further inquiries. General Counsel determined that, in fact, the information is confidential information and is protected under the Magnuson Act. And so we had to remove it. I thought and I'd hoped that there was a notice to that effect in its place on the web page. But anyway, that's the situation.
So just one quick follow-up, a comment, actually, then I'm done. I'm really disappointed as well that information was taken down. Sector management, the way in which this fish is being transferred back and forth and within, it's a black box. Makes it very difficult to understand what's going on. And frankly, I still have problems with this information being considered confidential. Individual fishermen were gifted fish, you know, public resource. It was gifted to them. So for them to now keep it close to the vest and not share that information, you know, with the public as to what's happening, it just rankles me. And again, puts us at a great disadvantage when we try to figure out at this early stage in the game what is going on. I know this council washed its hands of dealing with operations plans of individual sectors, and I disapproved. I did not support that position of this council. But I find myself as a council member to be continuously disadvantaged by a lack of information, real-time information as to what's going on. Very difficult to answer questions from fishermen who feel they've been treated unfairly, from fishermen who feel they've been treated fairly but still would like to know more of what's happening. So just a registering of my concern and my complaint that indeed that information was removed from the website, further divorcing the council from what's happening.
Doug?
I think Gene was going to respond to that, and I'll come in afterwards because I was on a different subject.
Yes, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pat. I think the region is still looking at releasing this information in aggregate form. That doesn't. Is that correct? And we're working on that or not?
Well, we're working on it, but there's some question about whether that would be useful information in any way. I'm sorry, were you done?
Well, I was just going to say the confidential nature of it is defined by the Madison-Stevens Act, not because of some arbitrary decision on the part of the agency that we don't want to give out this information. This is information that's required to be submitted, and under the Madison-Stevens Act, such information is confidential unless it can be released in some sort of aggregate form that doesn't reveal particulars about individual entities or vessels involved.
Hi, thank you. I also wanted to echo Dave's praise of your agency's handling of the herring closure there. It did catch us by surprise because we were having so much problems trying to get the landings to occur, and then to see it so quickly, we were caught off guard and surprised, and the way it was handled, I think, was a testament to your staff and how good they are. My other question regarding herring, have you get your regulatory amendment that you're considering for daily reporting, or have you given consideration as to which permits that would apply to? Would it just be limited access permits? That you'd have a daily reporting requirement? Would it just be AB permits? Any thoughts on that yet?
Just really, really preliminary thoughts at this point, but I think the goal would be to try to encompass as much of the active vessels as we possibly could, and there were even some discussions about making some changes to the D category to make sure we didn't miss that information. So no, I mean, we're at very early stages, but certainly the goal is to make sure we do get what we need. Yeah.
Mary Beth.
Well, on the herring, I definitely wouldn't use the word praise the handling of the situation, but I do think the staff worked extremely hard last week to allow for the reopening. We certainly do appreciate that. And daily reporting is definitely required in this fishery, and we support that. Even though we tried to, and I think we were successful at capturing the majority of vessels, getting them to call their numbers in quickly, you still can't capture everybody. So requiring it, I'm pleased that the administration, that can be done through a regulatory amendment. But, you know, for the council's information, I mean, the agency chose to close the fishery when we had 10,000 metric ton available to the fishery. And granted, there was a lot of activity on the water, but we do not have markets in New England that will absorb 10,000 metric ton in a week. We don't have enough trucks. We don't have enough places or shelves to put it on. It's just impossible to happen. So the industry was really taken by surprise. And because there were still vessels on the water, even though there was a closure on a Friday, there was a 12-hour landing window on a Monday that began at midnight in the middle of the biggest gale we've had this fall. So consideration of the weather wasn't really high on the list, or I'm not even too sure, but that was problematic. And now we are in the middle of a 48-hour window of being able to fish and land. And, you know, I just want to highlight these things. I mean, we talk about avoiding race to fish and scallops and other management plans and making choices based on that. And we've had this ongoing race to fish and herring managed by the states for some time, and this is the first time that the agencies had to do something due to, you know, the low tack in 1A, and it really highlights a problem in this fishery, and it's a very significant problem. And, you know, I would like to see us address it. I appreciate the fact that we're going to be able to move to daily reporting quickly. We really do need it. There have been some issues with how it's been handled. It's been problematic for the industry, but hopefully we can try to move forward in a better manner.
Yeah. First off, we didn't think that there were 10,000 pounds left when we made the decision. And the nature of this fishery has been that there has been a pulse as we get closer to the tack, and everybody's watching that, and we understand that the industry is trying to get their last trip in, but there's been this very difficult to predict pulse activity at the as we get closer to the tack, and we've also, frankly, seen some delays in reporting as we get closer to the tack, and so this has been really hard for everyone to monitor. When we made the decision, the weather was actually predicted to be quite nice over the weekend, and that changed after we made the decision. But that's the nature of any kind of tack fishery, where you're going to have this, you know, activity where everybody's competing for the landings. But I think the biggest complicating factor for us was the days out of the fishery, and I realize that the states are, you know, trying to make sure that the fishery lasts into the fall season. But we were in a situation where we expected very, very large landings at the end of the landing period on Thursday. And then because the vessels can effectively go out and fish, even though they can't land on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we had potentially three more days of fishing before the next landing window. The days out of the fishery also complicate our ability to make these projections. And frankly, we came pretty close. And I think that if we'd gone until Tuesday, I think probably we would have attained the quota. That's as close as we're going to get with the rudimentary tools we have and with the nature of this fishery.
Okay, I do need to move on. Anything really pressing? Jimmy?
Yeah, the question, this is to do with sectors, and I know there's a letter in the binder, and it may be coming up later. And the question is the agency and reconciling the catch data with the sector managers. If it's going to come up later, then I don't have to ask the question. I'll ask it. I mean, you know, my understanding is that there hasn't been any reconciliation yet, and we're quite well into the year. That's question number one. When can we get that? When can the managers expect to be able to get that reconciliation so there's no surprises in this fishery? you know. And then secondly, how are we going to handle the year end when the sectors are supposed to balance their books in 2 weeks after the year end, yet we need the managers will need the reconciliation from the agency to balance those books. And if we're going to be this far behind, it's going to cause the sectors, you know, some sector managers some problems, and we could have some issues.
So I'm also concerned about the reconciliation, and sent an inquiry to our statistics folks yesterday. So I'll need to get back to you on the details of it. But I had understood that we did reach out to all of the sectors to try to set up appointments to try to go through the reconciliation. And so we do want to do that, and we do need to do that as quickly as possible. In terms of the end of year, I think we need to get through this early reconciliation process, do some sort of periodic check to make sure we're still or get to a point where we're, you know, where we're pretty close to each other, do periodic checks. But then at the end of the year, I think there'll need to be another special effort to sometime before, maybe a month before the end of the fishing year, to make sure everybody's very close and we're all looking at the same numbers.
David, and then I'm going to move on.
Be very brief, Mr. Chair. I'm also concerned with this information in Groundfish about the leasing of quota, and I would offer a suggestion that perhaps you could do it by, in an aggregate form, by port and species, and an average price by port, something like that. So, as an example, Hampton Seabrook transferred 5,000 pounds of gray sole to Portsmouth, or something like that, because we really need that information, both as managers and as fishermen. I think that a lot of fishermen may have essentially given their fish away because they didn't understand what other ports were getting for price, and conversely, some other people may have extorted their neighbors with unreasonable prices because they heard a rumor that somebody else got paid that. There really is no way to verify what the truth is here. I am concerned. I think if we did it in an aggregate form, I think any port that has more than three vessels, we could give out that information, and then as managers, we'd have some idea what's going on, and the fishermen would have some idea what the fair value of their fish was. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Pat. Moving on, General Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the good news is that we were not sued in the last couple of months. That's a first for a while. I think I reported last time, I'm certain I did it, that the Martha's Vineyard Dukes County Commercial Fishermen's Association, Michael Flaherty, had sued NIMS, ASMFC, and the states and ASMFC for not adequately managing or promulgating a fishery management plan for river herring and shad. That lawsuit is in its preliminary stages, and nothing has really happened since I reported on it last time. In the Amendment 16 litigation, we have another potential plaintiffs that has moved to join the lawsuit. Food and Water Watch has moved the court to allow it to enter as an intervener, as a plaintiff. As you know, the Conservation Law Foundation, I think I reported on this as well, intervene on behalf of the government as a defendant in the lawsuit. We have been engaged in discovery motions regarding this lawsuit. Usually discovery is not allowed by courts in administrative law cases like this that are based upon administrative records rather than on some dispute of the facts. Nevertheless, the plaintiffs, the current plaintiffs in the lawsuit, have requested that the administrative record be supplemented in part to add to the record the recent Inspector General reports on NOAA enforcement activities. They've also asked, to depose Dr. Lubchenko, Monica Medina, the regional administrator, Pat Kirkle, and two council members, John Pappalardo and Sally McGee. Now, we've vigorously opposed all of these motions on grounds that it's not appropriate to supplement the record in this case, nor is it appropriate to conduct depositions. And we are awaiting the court's decision on these motions. And if there's a tentative schedule to begin or to have briefs filed, the motions for summary judgments, which basically is the means for the court to decide the case, to be filed as soon as November 22nd on behalf of the plaintiffs. And then we, the government, would have until February to reply to the briefs, and then there would be replies to the replies in the March spring timetable. So things have been pushed back a little bit because of these so-called discovery motions. I've reported in the past that the plaintiffs that challenged the Scallop Amendment 11, the limited access general category, FMP and the IFQ FMP, filed an appeal. In that case, the court found in favor of the government on all counts, and the plaintiff has appealed that case. All briefs have been filed in that appeal, and we're looking at a January time frame for oral arguments in that appeal. Those would occur in Philadelphia in the Third Circuit for the U.S. Court of Appeals. The NOAA has decided to file a notice of appeal in the Western Sea case, which was a case that challenged the permit splitting prohibition in Herring Amendment 1. That in that case, the district court, the lower court, found in favor of the plaintiffs and basically invalidated the permit splitting prohibition that was contained in Amendment 1 to the Herring Fishery Management Plan. And the government has decided at least to file a protective notice of appeal, which gives us the right to continue with the appeal if we so decide. The Department of Justice has not made its final decision on whether to approve our request for the appeal, but we are in a position to pursue the appeal if Department of Justice does make that final decision. We have another appeal that was filed by Oceana with respect to the government's prevailing in the challenge to the omnibus SBRM amendment. We are awaiting for scheduling of filing of motions in that case, and nothing else has happened. In another challenge to a herring-related provision, and that provision was the one that the agency promulgated that required 100% observer coverage in closed area, groundfish closed area 1. That case was basically stayed, or the litigation was deferred based on the agency's decision to re-promulgate that rule in order to seek comments on one of the exemptions in that rule, which allowed vessels after pumping operations to not bring the net on board for observation if there were only small amounts of fish left in the net. We proposed that rule and alternatives to change that rule back in September, and we are in the final throes of deciding what to put in the final rule, and hopefully that final rule will be filed with the Federal Register and published in the next week or two. I think that concludes all necessary updates on litigation, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Gene? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. Northeast Fisheries Science Center.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll summarize where we stand with respect to current resource survey activities. Our planned stock assessments running from December of this year through 2012. Comment on a workshop between the SSCs and my staff that's scheduled for December, and then just a heads up for the next meeting, something we want to present then. The autumn bottom trawl survey has been extended an additional month on the Bigelow because of weather. We were able to acquire additional sea days, and this is somewhat later than we normally run the survey, but there's been considerable problems with weather, and we want to make sure we cover all of the survey stations, particularly with respect to the upcoming stock assessment work that's going to occur this spring with winter flounder. One of the biological notes is that we've run into a high densities of wool grass off of New Jersey, and that had already been reported to us by industry that there was some fouling that was occurring. And right now, our Sandy Hook lab is doing additional work to try to better understand why this bloom has occurred. The 2010 herring acoustic survey on the Delaware is completed, and probably one of the more interesting comments on that is that the spatial extent of spawning herring is much greater this year than we've seen in previous years. What the meaning of that is at this point is not clear, but they're seeing herring in more areas than they had previously. Whether the densities have changed or not, it's not clear yet, and that's what the analysis is occurring is focused on. The survey trawl sweep catchability study, which is basically looking at different sweeps with the existing research trawl that's used on the Bigelow. The field work is done on that, and the Ecosystem Surveys branch right now is doing the analysis to compare the catchability of the different sweeps in bottom trawl surveys. And as an aside to that, DFO apparently likes the net that we've been using on the Bigelow, and they're considering adopting that for their bottom trawl survey work in the areas where our stock assessments overlap. And they'll be doing a survey in February of this coming year using that bottom trawl. And then for 2011, it's for the fiscal year segment of it, that's we plan to do bottom trawl survey off the Bigelow, and that'll be between February and May. There'll be a new scallop dredge survey around the Sharp, May through July. Clam dredge survey in the Mid-Atlantic off the Delaware, and then again another herring hydroacoustic survey in September. With respect to stock assessments, well, the reason I'm here is that Jim Weinberg is back in Woods Hole getting ready for the last assessment of December of 2010, and that will occur on November 9th through December 3rd, and that will deal with three stocks of hake and loligo, and it will be a benchmark assessment. For 2011 and 2012, the plan is for the spring assessments, we'll deal with winter flounder. That will be a benchmark assessment for those three stocks. The traditional track assessments for Eastern Georgia's Bank cod and haddock and Georgia's Bank yellowtail. And then assessment updates for bluefish, black sea bass, and scup and fluke, and probably also dogfish. Then in December, black sea bass and Gulf of Maine cod. And then in the following year, to update the yellowtail benchmark and to do the herring benchmark, as we've talked in the past. Again, track for the Georgia's Bank, East of Georgia's Bank cod and haddock, and then Georgia's Bank yellowtail. And finally, in December 2012, a surf clam benchmark and a Georgia's Bank cod benchmark. And in the meeting I mentioned on the 6th and 7th in Woods Hole, there will be a meeting between the Population Dynamics Branch staff from the center and the two SSCs. Basically, this has arisen from discussions we've been having within the NRCC about how we can better coordinate how we provide assessment advice to the councils. Much of this will deal with uncertainty in setting the ABCs, but also be discussions of the roles of management strategy evaluations and how many assessments we can produce and how the SSC should be involved in the review process. And finally, what happens in the out years when we're not doing a benchmark assessment? How does the SSC provide advice on on setting specifications. And then finally, as an update or for your information of something that we plan to present at your next meeting, you may know that we have been working under the NRCC, both the councils and the center, to develop a different approach to doing stock assessments. And we expect to present where we are in this process to the councils at the January and February meetings of the two councils. So it's just a heads up of something that's coming. And this will be a fairly extensive presentation. Questions?
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council Liaison.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Mid-Atlantic Council met down in Cape May from October 12th to the 14th. The council recommended a 20 million pound quota for dogfish and a 3,000 pound trip limit for the 2011 year. We'll be discussing that later, seeing how that's a joint plan with the New England Council. The council also approved Amendment 11 to the Atlantic mackerel, squid, and butterfish fishery. The amendment would implement a limited access program in the Atlantic mackerel fishery, revises essential fish habitat designation for all FMP species in the life stages, and establishes mackerel allocation formula of the landings of 93.8% commercial and 6.2% recreational. The council also received an update from the National from NIMS on the butterfish cap, which will start January 1st, 2011. That was about it, unless Rick has anything else to add.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frank, I don't know if you covered the spiny dogfish quota, but we did recommend that at 20 million pounds. We also established an ad hoc committee to evaluate approaches for interjurisdictional coordination on the conservation of river herring. That committee will meet subsequent to the FMAT. The FMAT meets today on Amendment 14 to our SMB plan that would deal with Alicene bycatch. And so we'll look forward to a basically a broader review of some of those interjurisdictional considerations. We're also moving forward with the visioning project right now. We'll be considering a draft statement of work at our December council meeting on that issue. We'll be meeting in December in Virginia Beach from December 13th through 16th. We'll have a habitat and ecosystem workshop the first day and a half of that meeting. We'll then meet with the ASMFC to set recreational measures on summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass. Last week at the ASMFC meeting, there was a request to move forward with a possible reallocation of the scup fishery. And so on that point, the two committees agreed to move forward with an appropriate bioeconomic analysis of that question. And so that's something that we would look forward to initiating in the near future. We're also developing an AP performance report that would better integrate the advisory panels into the ABC setting process. We're trying to come up with a structured way to integrate that on the water perspective and get that information into the SSC for consideration. So we're working with the social scientist on our SSC to develop the format for that and identify those metrics that they'd like to have input from the APs on. And just further to the regional planning body discussion that your executive director raised earlier today, we have requested, we are in the process of requesting a seat on the management board of MARCO, which is our regional governance agreement. That process is very much in flux. We're in a transitional period right now, and so we hope to have some sort of effective engagement with MARCO while the regional planning process unfolds. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Mary Beth?
Yeah, just a question on the ad hoc committee that's going to address jurisdictional issues for river herring. I'm just curious, what kind of work product do you expect from that committee? And when you say ad hoc, do you have, have the committee seated for 2011, or do you have any type of time frame for that?
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that, the committee will meet at our December meeting on the first day, so that Monday they'll be meeting. And the specific motion that was passed asked the committee to evaluate the most effective approaches for coordination and cooperation in the conservation of river herring and shad between the different management bodies, and then also to explore measures that would afford EFH protection and or other bycatch and stock rebuilding provisions under Magnuson for the species. So they're two separate questions. I would anticipate that they'll meet in December and have at least some preliminary recommendations following the FMAT evaluation of the Amendment 14. So today the FMAT will meet, and we'll have probably a meeting summary within the next few days available from that meeting, and that will feed into the that will feed into the ad hoc committee. But the ad hoc committee will meet in December and then have some preliminary recommendations to the council. And I would just point out that given the high degree of overlap between the herring and mackerel fisheries, as both councils move forward with our respective amendments, with Amendment 14 and Amendment 5, that it would be helpful if we can try to explore and create some opportunity for dialogue, perhaps between the two committees, early in next year, as our committee begins to develop options in response to the FMAT evaluation, and as Amendment 5 approaches completion, if we could have some sort of dialogue between the two committees to try to see to what degree we can achieve complementary measures, just given the high degree of overlap between those fisheries, I think would probably be well served by inserting some opportunity for discussion there.
Just to follow up, Dr. Pierce and I are on both the Herring Committee and the Mackerel Committee, and so I agree with the chairman of the Mid-Atlantic that some dialogue between those two committees would be very helpful and maybe streamline a process, and so you don't have two different groups starting from scratch and creating alternatives. But I also, for the work product for the ad hoc committee, where they are going to be looking at jurisdictional issues for different management bodies and who does what, I think perhaps our two chairmen could have a discussion about whether or not we would want to have some New England presence on the ad hoc committee.
Okay, thank you. U.S. Coast Guard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The report covers the period 1 September to 15 November. During that period, conducted 411 boardings, issuing 6 violations for an observed compliance rate of 98.5%, which is up from the last reporting period, which was 97.3%. For the safety side of the house, again, 411 boardings, 89 safety violations, compliance rate 78.3%, which is down from last period. During that time period, we had 8 voyages were terminated for safety reasons, 49 casualties, and 4 medevacs, 107 lives saved, and 4 lives lost. Also, 231 fishing vessel safety exams conducted and 164 decals issued. The just a note that the Coast Guard Authorization Act was signed by the President on October 15th. There are, of the 102 sections of the statute, the 3 of them are applied to fishing vessel safety. I'm sure there's a lot of questions about the implementation of the act. There's significant changes in inspection, carriage requirements, training and competency standards, and construction standards. I don't have specifics to provide at this time. Obviously, we have the rulemaking process to go through, and any discussions right now would be premature. But we'll do our best to provide information in a responsible manner as we continue to work through the rulemaking process. With that, that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? All right, Beth.
Yeah, I appreciate the information on the new Coast Guard legislation, because it certainly does raise questions, as you indicate. And we did anticipate that there would be, you know, some significant rulemaking that would go on. And will you be all, like, laying out that process, you know, like setting goals, you know, these are the number of items that we need to accomplish, and this is how we're going to prioritize it and move forward? I mean, the training section alone seems to be very significant, and I think the industry will be, you know, looking for that.
Sort of a plan of action and milestone type presentation. I'll see what I can put together. I'm not sure what's available. I think we're sort of, you know, like I said, 102 sections. There's a lot of stuff in that act, and as that information becomes available, I'll present it to the council. I'll ask and see what they have. I know nothing's available right now, but as we move on, I will present it as it comes available.
Any other questions? NIMS Enforcement and VMS.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Council. I'll give you some updates on our process that we're working on towards the improvement on the enforcement program. Sometime this week, we will start working through the applications for the 8 uniformed officers that we advertised. I understand we had over 1,500 applicants, and we're going to start that process sometime this week and reviewing it, and then we'll, depending on how many of the folks we hire that need additional training, we'll determine how many people actually hit the waterfront to start working with us. The special master has begun their review of select cases. However, it just started, and I have no real information to provide yet on that process, other than the fact that they, Judge Swartwood has begun his review primarily on the penalties during those select cases as a result of the IG review. Good news, we did hire a contractor this week that started. She's working in, to improve our outreach education efforts in the Office of Law Enforcement. Her name's Sheila Johns. She's getting up to speed this week, and then we'll work together on putting a plan of action in place where she gets involved with industry. We're also looking at a compliance or fishery liaison point that may also involve improving compliance, and that's still in the works right now. So that should be fairly soon, probably by the next meeting, we may have that position in place as well. I am going to leave some copies of a press release on the back table, and I encourage folks, and I'll send it, Mr. Chairman, I'll send it to you as well so you can forward to the council, but the Office of the General Counsel Enforcement Litigation has put out their draft penalty policy, and they are open for public comment through December 20th. You can access it through the National Marine Fisheries website. Like I said, I'll also leave it in the back. I encourage everybody to review that and provide any comment as possible. I'm also encouraging all the council members to reach out to the chairman, and then I'll follow up with the chairman on any suggestions for both a regional priorities for the Office of Law Enforcement as well as national priorities for the Office of Law Enforcement. We're in the midst of beginning that process right now, and through the end of the year, we will be collecting input from stakeholders, and then we're going to try to put together a plan of action that will start basically be a living document. Each year we will review those priorities to make sure we both regionally are doing what we should be doing as well as the national. A few personnel actions have occurred. They did advertise the position for the new director. That closes early next month. And then I expect an actual director in place probably late January, early February. We'll get through the holidays and then they'll move on that position. For those that have worked and known Assistant Special Agent in Charge Lou Yehemchek out of our New Bedford office, after 30-plus years of his career, he will retire at the end of next month, end of December, Louis Hemchuk will retire. And right now we're still under a hiring freeze for special agents, but there is a process where we're requesting waivers to fill critical positions so I can advertise and get that manager position backfilled down in New Bedford. That concludes my report, sir.
Any specific questions for enforcement? Okay, thank you, Tim. VMS.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, council members. This is a great venue here, by the way, my first time here, and a beautiful spot. I'm Bill Semro, Northeast VMS Program Manager in Gloucester. The VMS team is currently monitoring 1,126 vessels. And I thought I'd give you a quick breakdown of the permits of those 1,126 vessels. 471 are sector vessels, 178 common pool with groundfish permits, 342 vessels with limited access scallop permits, 637 vessels with general category scallop permits, 750 vessels with surf clam or ocean quahog permits, 87 with herring permits, and 3 with monkfish category F permits. As you're probably aware, the sector vessel Joanne H caught fire and sank during a trip off Chatham on October 26th, and the crew was safely recovered from their life raft by the Coast Guard. The reason I mention this is that the SAR controller at Woods Hole was quoted in the press as stating that the Coast Guard used VMS along with their Rescue 21 system to locate the vessel and save the crew. Coincidentally, prior to this event, the VMS team had notified the vessel's owner of chronic VMS reporting problems, specifically large gaps in its position reporting. We were, of course, relieved to see that the owner had apparently heeded the notifications and the VMS was reporting regularly when the Coast Guard needed location information. Late last week, our VMS provider, BoatTrax, experienced computer program failures over a seven-hour period, and that resulted in vessel owners not receiving their declaration acknowledgments. That prompted numerous complaints to the VMS team. BoatTrax assured us that work was underway to prevent such a reoccurrence by having backup systems to handle future failures. This past weekend, there was a planned power outage for preventive maintenance by the NOAA Chief Information Officer at Silver Springs Headquarters Complex. And this is a five-year event that mostly affected NOAA email and internet service on the East Coast. Despite our efforts to mitigate the impact of VMS, it did cause our processes to stop functioning for about 22 hours until the power was restored late Saturday evening. At the invitation of the Scallop Committee, I briefed LAGC Scallop VMS requirements down in Providence a few weeks ago, and I drafted a helpful flow diagram that helps vessel operators with multiple VMS permits understand when they can power down their VMS in port. And there was some interest from the industry in getting a copy of that flow diagram, and I'll be making that available to Deirdre Bolke so that she could post it to the webpage. And I'll also be putting it on my VMS webpage as well. For the next few months, I'll be focusing on VMS software changes to support new regulatory actions for the next fishing year. And that includes changes for Monkfish Amendment 5, Scallop Amendment 15, Groundfish Framework 45, and the Herring Regulatory Amendment, which Pat mentioned in her briefing earlier. My plan is to finalize those changes by early February in order to provide new software to vessel owners and update our VTRAC monitoring system by April of 2011. One last note with regard to marine spatial planning. I had a request last month from through SFD from the Maine Lobstermen's Association who mentioned that there is an initiative for an offshore wind project mid-coast Maine. And the Lobstermen's Association wanted some data on the number of lobster vessels that are principally ported in Maine and the number of them that have VMS units. There was concern, rightfully so, that those entities that are doing the planning and looking at fishing activity offshore may rely too heavily on VMS for the information. And what we found out was that there are about 1,311, not about, there are 1,311 vessels with lobster permits, principally ported in Maine, and only, and you may not be surprised, 85, only 85 of them actually have a VMS unit. So that's about 6.5%. So even though VMS can certainly provide some data about activity offshore, when the states are looking at offshore projects such as wind farms, there are obviously you've got to be careful on what you're looking at. In this particular case, VMS is only showing a very small part of the activity in that area. And that concludes my briefing. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, any comments?
Last week was the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. There were a few committee meetings that are relevant to this council. The first one was, one of the meetings was spiny dogfish, and the spiny dogfish board did vote to support the 20 million pound quota for the next fishing year, and that is the amount that the Mid-Atlantic Council has adopted as well. Rick referenced that a little earlier on, and I understand that dogfish is on the agenda for later on, the last day, I think, last piece of business on the last day. So we also heard a presentation from Paul Borrego, who did, once again, a wonderful job explaining where we stand with stock status, all of the new thinking on spiny dogfish. That was very helpful to us. The other meeting was the C-section meeting, consisting of the New England states, New York, New Jersey, and I think they're the only others. Anyways, that was another useful meeting, and it's important for me to point out a motion that was made and that was adopted by the section because it's relevant to a request of this council. In your correspondence section of all the handouts, you'll see nothing from ASMFC. Apparently, they weren't able to convey the nature of that vote to this council for our meeting today. That's why I'm going to describe it shortly. But in the correspondence section, you'll see a letter from me, a memo from me to the Sea Herring section. This is with regards to the haddock bycatch cap. And there was a specific recommendation from my agency to the section relative to that haddock bycatch cap. Also in your package, you'll find a letter from Norpel, the processing operation plant in New Bedford, that describes the situation from their perspective. So that letter, the content of that letter was essentially relayed to me early on, and I translated it, so to speak, for the benefit of the section, and then offered up to them division perspective, and then a request of the section. After hearing the concerns of the sea herring fishery, a motion was made, and I'll just quickly read that motion so you'll know what it is, since it is relevant to our discussions potentially for today in the priority setting. And that was to move the section in the interest of our continuing partnership with the New England Fishery Management Council on management of Atlantic sea herring and our shared concerns about bycatch in the herring fishery. Request the council, one, determine if the percentage of the haddock TAC for the sea herring fishery haddock bycatch cap can be increased in response to a recent increase in observer coverage, and then two, determine whether the boundaries of the area or areas to which the bycatch cap applies can be modified to prevent a closure of the Gulf of Maine fishery when the cap is reached. So that motion was made, and it was adopted by the section. So that again, it's relevant to what may happen here this morning on priority setting and later on during the week. That pretty much summarizes the points I wanted to make regarding spiny dogfish and sea herring, Mr. Chairman. Other council members who are present may recall something else that's relevant to our business today.
Thanks, Dave. Just for council members. Dave, can you shut your mic off? For council members' information, it is behind tab one, the letter from the Atlantic States. They did transmit it. It's in the priorities section, Dave. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. There were quite a number of us in Charleston last week, and a couple more highlights pertaining to Atlantic Herring. One is that the section adopted addendum two, which complements our amendment four. The section also voted for the 2011 quota to begin the fishing year June 1st and to close the fishery at 95%. And the section voted to initiate an addendum to consider adding an additional day for small vessels in Area 1A. And should that move ahead, it will be voted on at the March meeting. Just a couple more issues of that pertains to this council. One is concerns river herring. And the Maine Sustainable Harvest Plan was approved, and it's for directed fishing in the rivers only. There will be no directed fishing for river herring in state waters. The New Hampshire plan was tabled until spring meeting. And shrimp section did meet before the commission last week, but approved, I think it's 136-day season starting the 1st of December through April 15th, and with a mid-season review. And that's a lot of other things went on, but not of concern to this council.
Paul Howard.
Terry, I think it was a last council meeting. The council expressed concern about the state's allocating dogfish, and they wanted to keep abreast of that. Is there any update on that?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me, Paul. There is a state-by-state addendum that's going through, but it's for the southern management area only. The northern states are not participating in that addendum.
Just one other thing I'd point out. I was in Charleston last week, and I do note that the prospects for a river herring assessment, from what I saw on the board and in discussions, looks like 2012 with an asterisk. Pending funding, assuming funding issues can be worked out. So as we talk about Amendment 5 and about the possibility of river herring management, as well as the Mid-Atlantic Council looking at river herring issues and the macro plan, it doesn't look like an assessment's going to be available until at least sometime in 2012. Terry?
One more jag of the memory is that one more time the ASMSC will be sending a letter to the council pertaining to access for shrimp vessels into the habitat closed area. And it's, I believe, Mr. Chairman, letter will go to you and to David Preble.
Anything further? Okay, final report is RSC Chairman. David?
Good morning, everybody. The Research Steering Committee met on November 12th. The purpose of this meeting was to encourage an open conversation among the committee members about the core functions of the committee and how it might become more effective in the future in light of changing external circumstances. The committee hasn't met in quite a while, and the regulatory climate has changed quite a bit, and the formation of sectors, things like that, has probably altered the means by which this committee may operate. So, for example, the SSC is now designated by Magnuson to develop research recommendations. The Cooperative Research Program Initiatives has formed a series of networks to do conservation engineering. These are groups of individuals and institutions who will work on unique bycatch challenges. So instead of funding individual partnerships between a scientist and a fisherman or a group of fishermen, they will now be fairly large groups of people working on one problem in a kind of soup-to-nuts idea. So it include social scientists, economists, as well as the people doing the research out on the water, with the hopes of coming up with comprehensive solutions that can be instituted by the management regime. Sector formation. A lot of fishermen now are more interested in cooperating to resolve bycatch problems and the committee feels it has to find a way to work with sectors as individuals, if you will, because they are groups of people, but each sector is an individual entity. This meeting is followed on a telephone conversation between the committee chair and several committee members last August, during which we agreed it would be desirable to have a dialogue about refocusing the committee's efforts. We feel that we need to restructure a little bit in light of these changes. So topics covered during the meeting, we had a briefing on recent activities of the Cooperative Research Partners Program by John Hoey. He provided an overview of recent program activities, budget, and status of funding. Status of funding is currently unknown at this time because the government's in one of its periodic continuing resolutions on budgets and whatnot. So hopefully that will be resolved shortly. At a future meeting, the council will be provided with a list of the most recently funded projects, the purpose of each project, the level of funding provided by the federal government, and project deliverables, again, once these budget situations are resolved. Then we went on to discuss our core functions in light of these changes. We felt that we should continue to conduct management reviews of completed cooperative research projects. In doing so, the Research Steering Committee should promote and oversee the linkages between funded projects and management issues and ensure incorporation of useful results into the management process. We should also continue to receive briefings at the beginning and end of projects to make sure that they're properly guided. Reach out to industry through an annual meeting similar to what the Northeast Consortium does so that principal investigators might present work to their peers and to the managers. And request presentations on research set-aside projects at council meetings and at the Research Steering Committee for broad research areas. So, for example, on scallop resource surveys or turtle research, bycatch reduction across fisheries, to create an awareness of the research that's funded and let the council and the industry understand what is going on so that this information can be moved into the FMPs. And to also encourage outreach efforts and public awareness through gear research. Second, we develop a cooperative research priorities list. This may or may not be different than the SSC list for research priorities, and the reason for this is that a lot of the research the SSC may wish to have done may not be cooperative research by nature. Our sole focus is basically on trying to put projects together between fishermen and scientists that we've done on the water. It may be similar to the SSCs, but we just don't know yet. Third, to address problematic operational issues associated with the scallop, herring, and monkfish research set-aside programs, and assist with advising the Cooperative Research Partners Program about streamlining programs where possible. Just like the situation with experimental fishing permits a few years ago, these programs have a number of administrative challenges, timing issues, things of that nature that are rendering them less effective than they could be, and we hope to try and work on some of them. And forward any recommendations to the council oversight committees for further consideration. Fourth, to add value to the cooperative research program solicitations through better coordination and communication with the council and its staff and the research partners program staff and any other mechanisms that we may be able to determine to, again, streamline these projects to the extent that it's humanly possible, and make the communication better. Additional tasks that were identified include revisiting the existing Research Steering Committee policies to make recommendations to the Executive Committee as appropriate about any changes that may be necessary in light of the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act, and recommend new members to the Executive Committee to augment the existing expertise on the Research Steering Committee. Membership is currently depleted. We're missing at least one council member and several fishermen, and we feel that's hindering our discussions. So that's a very brief overview of our committee meeting. If you want to know any specifics, you're welcome to ask myself or Pat Fiorelli. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Any questions for David? Okay, we'll take a 10-minute break. Mary Beth?
Just one quick question, Mr. Chairman. I understand the NRCC has met in recently. I don't know what the date is. I was wondering if we would be receiving a summary on that meeting at any time.
We'll circulate the summary when it's completed, when all the bodies that participated sign off on it, and I'll make sure that the council members get a copy of it. And we can discuss it at the next meeting. Take a 10-minute break.